Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Ben Stark of Wondermill Films. Matt Scalisi, editor of filmnerds.com.
Matt, what's up?
I'm just enjoying some glorious weather here in Alabama. I'm making it outside for a sort of rare appearance in the sun before I go and see another movie.
Yeah, well, if you want to go to a movie that when you leave it, it'll be a different season because it's so long, you should go see Transformers The Last Night.
And I think, I think, Ben, that, I mean, it's a, when you have weighty material, that's when you can really give a movie, you know, 2.5, 3 hours, because you can't cut anything out.
You know, in my life, if I look around my daily routine and, you know, just living life and going through things, there's not too many things heavier than my car.
Right.
So a car is pretty weighty, especially if it's flying through the air and talking. So you haven't seen a Transformers movie since, I think, the first one, or did you even bother?
I saw the first one, and I'll never forget. I walked out of the Cobb Hollywood 16 cinemas in Tuscaloosa into the lobby, and I audibly declared to all who would listen that I will never spend one penny or one second of my life watching another Michael Bay Transformers movie. And I've held to that promise.
Good for you. Yeah, I saw this new one, and I need somebody to just share with. And I figure you don't care if this gets spoiled for you.
Absolutely not.
I hated the first one as well. I hated the second one even more. And then something weird happened, and I think it might be that Michael Bay picked up an IMAX camera. Because I went to see Dark of the Moon almost as a joke on myself, like as a prank. I was punk-king myself and prank-king. And I was like, for the first hour of it, I was like, this is the same garbage. I hate it. And then something happened where I was like, oh, God, something, I like this. Something about this is appealing to me. Age of Extinction.
This is called Stockholm Syndrome, Ben.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I've stopped trying to psychoanalyze it, and I just have to get it out there. So how's this for a format? Can I just tell you things that happen in this movie, and then you react however you feel like reacting, and I'll just keep going?
Yeah, I may have some questions, but go for it.
Wow. Okay. So there's a bad robot in this movie, and he has brass knucks. And on one brass knuck, it says punish, and on the other brass knuck, it says enslave. Okay, next, there is, within 5 minutes of this movie starting,
kind of registered, and I have to stop for a second and go back. So why does a robot...
Okay, whoa, no. You're using the wrong word. If you're using the word why in any of this, in this
right.
episode of Film Nerds Unlimited. Why would a robot have brass knucks?
Yeah, right.
I don't know. Why would a robot wear chains or play basketball? Because there's a robot that lives in Cuba who all he wants to do is play basketball with John Turturro. So next. So at the beginning of the movie, within 5 minutes of the movie, there's kind of this restaging of the barbarian gladiator scene from the opening of Gladiator, the barbarian Rome fight battle scene.
Yeah.
There's kind of a restaging of that, and it's really impressively done, and the production design is pretty crazy, and the costume design is impressive, but it's definitely going for that tone. And it's this is a children's film, ostensibly. It's about talking robot cars. And it's one of the most violent battle scenes I've seen in years. This is a PG-13 movie. Within 5 minutes, like not 5 minutes, a horse gets speared in the eye, like incidentally, and flips over on its back.
Is this a battle between groups of humans?
Yes. So this is a battle between King Arthur's Knights of the Round Table and a barbarian horde, which is all races, all colors, all shapes and sizes. And they're waiting on Merlin to come with his magic staff. Merlin is played by Stanley Tucci, which
is incredible.
Noteworthy that he played a different character in the last Transformers movie.
Yeah,
and there's
right.
they don't mention it at all. They just, here he is. He's Stanley Tucci, and he is hamming it up. He's like got a drinking problem, and he's like stumbling around, and he's talking like Stanley Tucci would be ordering a sandwich at Blimpy, but he's got a Merlin beard on. let's see. I don't feel the need to go chronologically. There's a scene.
Do you
where
think?
They,
can I? I want to ask you just real quickly. In this franchise, then such respected names as Stanley Tucci,
John
Turturro,
Steve Buscemi,
Anthony Hopkins. Steve Buscemi's been in one.
He's in this one. He's in one scene as a transformer that has a beard made of bullets or trash or something. I don't know.
So does Michael Bay have some kind of, you know, stockpile of incriminating photos of Hollywood's greatest actors to blackmail them into participating in these movies?
I think more people feel the way I do than are willing to admit. I think a lot
that
of
they, you're saying these people think these movies are actually good.
Because I sure am. I don't know how you get this much material on a standard Hollywood film budget. And I'll get into kind of some more thoughts on that later. But Francis McDormand was in the third one.
Oh, my God. Holy crap.
Yeah. Either he's just buddies with the Coen brothers, because he does seem to have a special – John Goodman is in the last two. He has a special relationship with Coen brothers ensemble actors. And, so I don't know if it's just he pays well or what. I think that actors are interesting, curious people, and there's few things that I'm more curious about than what it's like to be on a Michael Bay set. So I think that might actually have something to do with it. And I think he keeps a set that is probably notably different than any other director's set.
How so?
For better or worse. There's probably a lot of improv. There's probably a lot of staying on your toes. You're probably not in your trailer very much because you got to be on set, like, changing the entire scene, like, immediately to make room for more product placement or more cleavage or more fire. I think that his first assistant directors, who are usually the people that keep like a set on schedule, are probably the most miserable people on the planet, because it feels like he is just going
on
at all
cocaine.
Times.
Saying he's on cocaine. Yeah.
It's I have to imagine that his bones are 75% compacted cocaine at this point.
Right.
Just the based on his film grammar. But yeah, I think honestly, and it's this, look, there's a part of this movie, this is a fun movie in the way that a bottle of vodka at a water park would be a fun time, where you're just so drunk and so like blitzed and sunburnt and just totally out of your mind, detached from reality, but you're on an inner tube going down a water slide, having a great time. There's a overwhelming, furious assertion that you enjoy yourself in this movie, and the heroes of this movie, they slide and flip and hang and dangle and run and jump, and there's a part where it's like literally Mark Wahlberg is just sliding down like this like gushing water wave going down the side of a spaceship, and then he jumps to another thing and he's sliding again. It's like the fifth somebody sliding down a surface thing scene in the movie, and it's wonderful every time. And yeah, there, it's just a sensory overload of movements and experience, but it's like, you know that you're going to have a hangover, but you, in the moment it's satisfying in a vulgar and obscene way.
You know, this description of Mark Wahlberg sliding down things is reminding me of a article that I think you retweeted at some point in the last week about that in the 80s, there was some sort of obsession of filmmakers with people sliding down things.
Yeah,
sliding down
usually like sliding down like muddy, a muddy ditch in the jungle, like in Predator and Romancing the Stone.
It was an incredibly in-depth sort of like cultural analysis of where that comes from. But I do think what it makes me think is too, just that, I mean, I think that in addition to representing kind of excess in Hollywood in ways that we don't even see anywhere else, even for really any studio, there's other things that make Michael Bay an outlier too. And I feel like culturally, and I don't want to say in terms of political correctness isn't the right way to say it, but just the whole cultural aesthetic of Michael Bay's movies seem to be of another time. It seems like he exists in this bubble, and inside the bubble, it's not 2017. It's like he has the technology of 2017, but he has the brain and the cultural savvy of someone from 1986.
Have you checked out the White House lately? I think he's a little closer than you might be thinking.
They make so much money. I mean, obviously.
No, I think
there are many people that like these movies. I just don't really know any of them, and they're not the people that I spend time with in my life, and they're not the people that I think make most Hollywood movies either.
No, but then again, there's this weird thing where, and this is something I was going to get into. And I'm not done with my list of things, by the way.
Sorry.
It's coming back. You're trying to create structure, and that's nobody appreciates that with this topic. So this summer, every time I went to go see a movie, I would sit down for the trailers, and I would see a trailer and be like, okay, another trailer, boom, boom, boom. And then the trailer for Transformers The Last Night would come on, and I would sit straight up because I felt like I was in the movie theater for the first time. And there is this lame, flat, boring aesthetic across so many of the movies that are released every year. And it makes me think of the muddy climax of Beauty and the Beast, or just kind of the overly filtered and layered. I mean, I love Wonder Woman, and Wonder Woman is a better movie than this, but the kind of over filtered color grading and everything of Wonder Woman. There's this kind of flat and first draft TV quality to so much of the visuals of films these days. And then when you get this guy who uses IMAX cameras and IMAX lenses and tons of light, I mean, so much light, and everything is so high contrast, and there's light sources that are totally unexplained, but it creates this magical big screen aesthetic that nobody else does. And the people nobody else does, but people have tried to do it, and some people have succeeded. I think that visually, Michael Bay movies have such a big influence on Marvel movies and J.J. Abrams movies.
Definitely.
And
I
even
totally
those
agree.
Movies, except for maybe Guardians of the Galaxy, which was also shot on Volume 2, which was also shot on IMAX cameras, I think aside from maybe that one and like The Force Awakens and Star Trek, I think they all fall a little short of really nailing that aesthetic. But I think that, look, I'm thankful that we get guilt-free version of this aesthetic. But even with all those movies out there, there's still something here. There is a sustained tracking shot towards the end of this movie of just like this spaceship passing through these like hexagonal like parts of a planet falling, and like there's like such mind-bending imagery here that is it. I was talking to a coworker earlier. Everything in here looks like a Dio album cover, and there's a psychedelic quality to a lot of the visuals here that you just don't see anywhere else. And then you combine that with the fact that you're seeing it on a tremendous screen and you're totally absorbed in it. There's an art here. It's like there's an art here, and then it's, you know, ordained with a bunch of Egg McMuffin wrappers or something. Just trash.
It's always been my issue. It's never that. Look, I didn't walk out of the first Transformers movie and decide what I decided because it was unprofessional or it didn't look like a movie to me, or it just looked sloppy. I walked out because it's a movie that, with all of that incredible budget and talent assembled, that it's still a movie that has farting robots and masturbation jokes. And it just seems like it actually makes me more angry to see talent wasted on such dumb material, pointless material. And I would love to see, you know, you mentioned the influence that he's had. What's funny, and another thing that makes me mad about it, is when that trailer you talk about has come up in the movie theaters for me, that first shot is this kind of big helicopter shot, I think, going over water towards a big mountainous island, and I always get tricked into thinking that I'm watching the Last Jedi trailer for a second, and then I realize what I'm watching, and I go, damn. But look, what it
damn
what
it,
it
I got to go see
is,
this movie. That's how you.
Yeah, no. What it makes me think is, of course, he's been influential to a lot of filmmakers that when I watch them, they're my favorite filmmakers, and they're making the best movies right now. I do somehow wish that Michael Bay's talent could be harnessed for movies that actually do appeal to me on a sort of intellectual and emotional level, instead of movies where Mark Wahlberg looks with confusion at something that will be added later. And there are jokes intended for, you know, 12-year-olds in there. That might be generous. But I think that it's such a weird combination, Ben. There's no other phenomenon I could think of that's quite like it, of just such tremendous talent being utilized solely for the absolute lowest common denominator of society.
Yeah, but I don't know. There's still something. It's like, movie started as carnival sideshow, you know, or as a state fair sideshow. You know, movies are the lowest common denominator, and there's something about that again, like he's literally trying to make something for everybody, and everybody is dumb. You know, like
this is so nihilistic. Where this is
going. Well, I know, but I don't know. There's something like sinister and sincere, like, at the same time about this. And there's it's populism to the point of horror, but at the same time, like, there's enough in there that, you know, wherever I am on that spectrum, probably on the lower end, it snags me, and it works at some points. So there's a joke that I laughed out loud at and was immediately embarrassed, where a little punk-ass robot is looking at pornography, essentially, of cars on the internet.
Of course.
It's just pictures of cars, and he's like, oh, look at that. And he's like, oh, look at the junk in her trunk. And the camera pans over, and it's a truck with a bunch of trash in the back of it.
Of course.
And yeah, I laughed. eye.
Oh, my God.
And, yeah, I was like, wow, that got me. So, yeah, there's something I got on the wavelength for sure. Hold on, let me check my list.
What this is telling me is that these movies have actually made you dumber, Ben.
No, I think that honestly, the amount of mental gymnastics I have to do to put together what's going on is probably, it's probably helping my brain grow. It's creating new neural pathways.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, in terms of visual sophistication, there is a sophistication here. And yes, I wish it was being put to better use, but where are the people, taking, people complain about Michael Bay, but then nobody really does it as well as him. Everybody is retreating to TV shows and everybody is backing up and doing everything in shot, reverse shot, boring compositions like it's, a 90s sitcom. And here's one guy that is shooting with the biggest cameras he could find and to put the biggest images he can shoot on the biggest screens he can find. And he's saving theaters. He's saving the cinematic experience. And I look at somebody like just pulling a name out of a hat, Jon Favreau, who is retreating to a studio to do everything on a blue screen and still not really going anywhere visually. It's just like everybody's getting more comfortable and easy and insulated. But meanwhile, Michael Bay is still taking his big ass camera out to the desert and getting it getting real explosions. And so it's like, yeah, everybody can flag on him and call him a coked up doofus, but nope, he's working harder to save movies than anybody except for Christopher Nolan and James Cameron.
He's probably the only guy you could confidently give a $500 million budget and know that you're going to make your money back.
Well, here's the thing, is that these movies don't cost that. Don't cost $500 million. And that's another thing, is that every single cent of his budget is on screen. And again, you look at a movie like Beauty and the Beast, which probably costs as much as this, maybe more, because they're really trying to do something with that. And it is this flat, at times very visually engaging, but overall just kind of this flat, drab experience that, especially towards the end of the movie, just kind of runs out of steam. And this, in Transformers The Last Night, is like the last 15 minutes of it is the most visually complex stuff of the whole thing, and that's like, and it's like a movie that starts off like completely dazzling. So again, it's like, yeah, I mean, the content is dumb, and even the most hardcore Transformers fans think this is a bastardization of the source material, but it's like, but this guy is doing something. Like, I don't know. It's just like, I don't know. He's trying. There's something worthwhile here, and I wish it was for a better purpose.
Well, Ben, I am glad that it brings you some kind of joy. I don't regret my decision to swear off Transformers movies. We're pretty sure this is his last Transformers movie, right?
Well, he says that every time, but so we'll see.
Yeah.
But I mean, look, I would urge everybody to, unless 3D somehow just doesn't work for you, your ocular distance is not right or something like that, or just doesn't, it's like, you know that 3D is bad, but if 3D has ever worked for you, I would totally recommend you, on your movie theater's discount day, go out and see this in IMAX 3D and tell me that you didn't have fun at some point or another. Obviously, I know you're not going to do that, but, speaking of, and there's, this is kind of off track, but it's worth noting that, and this is like one of the first things I talked to my wife about, because and this was something Franco and I talked about in our summer movie preview, whenever we first watched the trailer, I was like, well, it's kind of cool that it seems like he's not like overly sexualizing like Megan Fox or the 18-year-old girl that was in the last movie. And my wife was like, are you kidding me? Like, there's like this one shot of like a 14-year-old girl running around, and it's like way too much way too clingy clothes for comfort. And I was like, what are you talking about? And then I watched the movie, and I was like, oh, God, okay. Yeah, there's definitely one shot of, like, a Disney Channel actress that is objectifying and upsetting. But
he doesn't know how to shoot a woman any other way.
He doesn't.
I mean,
he doesn't, yeah.
That's how he
yeah,
was trained to do it. Yeah.
Upsetting, because this is not a woman we're talking about. but for the rest of the movie, she is tastefully presented. And then you have this actress that plays the heroine of the movie, who is presented during one scene like at 100% cleavage to a, like, yeah, this is him like lapsing to his like Victoria's Secret days, where it's like, okay, all right, is this for the whole movie? Like, what? But the climax of the movie, and really every scene after that, she's in like this dumpy flight suit that is like totally unflattering. But you're still supposed to take her seriously and supposed to, you know, relate to her, and she has agency as a character. And I was like, well, way to go, buddy. Like, you're growing up a little bit. Like,
trying.
Yeah, you're trying. You're trying. You kind of fall into old habits, and you're probably, you know, probably going to get busted for something awful someday. But, you know, good on you for listening to whoever told you to maybe stop shooting these women as objects. But yeah, so that was noteworthy. Also, Anthony Hopkins calls people dickhead and douchebags and fat ass a lot in this movie.
Hilarious. An old man cursing.
Mm-hmm. But he's totally committed. He's on. There's a scene where it's this pretty awesome car chase through London. And there's this shot where the IMAX camera is like centimeters above the road, and it's just like screaming, like going fast. And you're like, holy crap, this is awesome. And then it cuts to like this like wide angle shot of Anthony Hopkins in the car, and he's just laughing. And I was like, yeah, like there's like, there was a truth to that cut. Where it's like, as Michael Bay knew, he got like one of the most exhilarating shots of the whole movie, and then he cuts to Anthony Hopkins clearly in over his head, has no clue what's going on. It's probably not even a take that they were planning on using, and he's just like laughing, like, "What the hell am I doing?" And yeah, he totally goes for it. And I don't know, there is an infectious quality to Michael Bay's use of Anthony Hopkins, and it's also embarrassing and humiliating. And like, that's the thing, is like, I don't think these people are being blackmailed into it, because this itself is blackmail material.
Right. This is how Oscar campaigns are lost.
Exactly. This is compromise. But anyway, so thanks for letting me vent. I had to talk to somebody about this.
It's a cinematic pee-pee tape.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, get ready to go see this movie.
I'm gonna go cleanse my brain from this conversation and watch an Edgar Wright car chase movie. So
yes,
check
that
out for the next FNU episode.
Absolutely, yeah, that's the real movie this week. So I will totally defer to that. But you know, this was something worth mentioning.
All right, well, thank you.
All right, man. Yeah, absolutely. I'll probably cut it off right about there.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, man.
Yeah, see ya.
Bye.
Hey, Ben.
Hey, I totally forgot to mention something. So there's this Suicide Squad, like, rip-off thing where they show a bunch of bad Decepticons, and then they, like, throw their names on top of them in, like, a still frame, and one of the Transformers' names is Nitro Zeus. That's it. That's on my list.
Glad,
right.
Glad we got that in.
Okay. Okay, bye.
Okay. See ya.
For more Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.